Hello, this is Robert Ambrose, KPTZ board president and host of Rhythm Connection. Like you, I'm waiting to hear Dr. Locke's weekly COVID-19 update. I depend on KPTZ to hear this crucial information because it allows me to better understand how the virus is affecting our community. It also helps me gauge when I might see my distant new grandson. You'd depend on KPTZ to hear Dr. Locke too, and KPTZ depends on you to keep broadcasting. Please consider clicking on the Donate Now button at kptz.org to give us your support for our efforts. Thank you.
KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a hybrid meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks everyone for joining us, and I'll hand it, off to you, Dr. Berry.
Thank you so much. So yes, for anyone who doesn't know me yet, my name is Dr. Allison Berry, and I am your health officer as well as Clallam County's health officer, with Tom staying on as my deputy. I will be providing the epi update today, and then we can move on to taking questions. So unfortunately, we are seeing cases rise nationwide. In every state, you're seeing a rise in COVID-19 cases, but the largest rises are being seen in the South. Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Florida are really intense hotspots at this time. Cases have gone up 172% nationwide. Hospitalizations have risen 57%. And unfortunately, we're starting to see deaths rise in the country as well. So 20%, a 20% rise in deaths nationwide at this point. In Washington state, we're seeing a significant rise in cases as well. Cases are up 133%. And hospitalizations have started to rise as well. So we've seen so far just a 10% rise in hospitalizations statewide. But we anticipate that that's going to increase very soon. This is really driven primarily by the Delta variant. So 83% of all new cases diagnosed in the United States at this point are Delta variant cases. We've not yet seen Delta variant, or at least not diagnosed it locally, but certainly we anticipate that it's likely here and just hasn't been caught yet. And certainly we'll start to see it more over time. We have sent some sequencing for one of the larger outbreaks that happened in Clallam County that really looks like a Delta variant outbreak, and we likely will get that back in about 2 weeks. In Jefferson County, we are seeing a rise in cases as well. So we're up to 493 cases, or a rate of 72 per 100,000. And we've had 5 new cases come in since that number was calculated. So we always calculate it by a certain, we give a little lag time. So we anticipate that number is going to go up more in the next few days. In Clallam County, we're also having a really significant rise. We're up to 122 cases per 100,000. In all of these cases, we're really seeing this driven primarily by unvaccinated people who are gathering indoors unmasked. We certainly have seen some folks traveling as well. So in generally unvaccinated folks traveling and picking up infections and coming back home. But that's really what's driving the vast majority of our cases right now. Certainly the public health staff are very busy contact tracing all of these cases. And we will let you know if we, if there are changes in the epidemiology, but we're really seeing near exclusively driven by unvaccinated people at this point. In Jefferson County, it's mostly gathering indoors, social gatherings, and travel. In Clallam County, driven primarily by a series of outbreaks at churches, we're still seeing really large-scale outbreaks in church settings because folks are often unvaccinated, unmasked, and singing. So we see really high attack rates when that happens. From a vaccination perspective, 66% of Jefferson County is now fully vaccinated. 71% of those who are eligible, so those who are 12 and up, are fully vaccinated as well. Vaccines remain incredibly effective. 97% of those hospitalized nationwide are unvaccinated. So they are still incredibly powerful. They are very safe, and they are very much available. There are multiple places to get vaccinated in Jefferson County at this point. Jefferson Healthcare, Safeway, QFC, and the Tri-Area Pharmacy all are offering appointments for vaccination at this time. Main key messages I want folks to know. So we're seeing a dramatic rise in cases. If you haven't gotten vaccinated yet, now is really the time to do it. And the other key thing that we've started talking about, we're going to be putting out more messaging on today, is we are recommending a return to masking, regardless of your vaccination status. The primary reason that we're looking at recommending that is that we're seeing such a dramatic rise in cases, and it's really driven by unvaccinated folks who are unmasked indoors. And the challenge there is it's just really hard for businesses to assess whether or not you're vaccinated. And we're seeing kind of the honor system breakdown. We're seeing too many people come indoors unvaccinated and unmasked and spread the virus that way. So we're recommending that all of us go back to masking. It's a simple thing that we can do to keep ourselves and our communities safer. What we look at when we look at COVID-19 is there's really only a few tools we have. We have vaccines, we have masks, and we have lockdowns. And I'd really like to avoid the third one. And so we have to lean on the first two. We've done an incredible job in Jefferson County with vaccinations. We have, we have one of the highest rates of vaccination in the state, but we aren't quite high enough in our rate to prevent transmission as a whole. We're not truly at that herd immunity level. And so we have to rely on some of the other simple, effective mechanisms we have, which in this case is masking. So we are recommending everyone mask indoors, regardless of your vaccination status, if you're in a space where vaccine status isn't known. Now, if you are indoors in a space like, for instance, you're in a meeting with folks whose vaccine status you all know. So if you know that everyone around you is vaccinated, it is okay in that setting to continue to not wear a mask. But in any other place, you know, public spaces where you don't know the status of the people around you, we do recommend going back to masking up. So grocery stores, movie theaters, any place where you're going to be gathering with lots of people, certainly churches, any place where you're going to be spending a lot of time around people and you don't know their vaccine status, we recommend masking up. Now, businesses have the option, if they want to, of verifying vaccine status at the door. So if people come in and they can say, I'm vaccinated, flash that vaccine card, then they wouldn't have to mask back up. But in many cases, we found businesses are not comfortable with filling that role. And so we would generally recommend masking if you're not able to do vaccine status assessments. And so with that, I will take any questions.
Hey, thank you.
Lots to unpack there.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Berry, masking indoors, you know, I mean, it's obviously we're not through this, so I'm not taking any issue with it. I just want to understand it a little bit. Right now at the county, when the public comes in, we ask for an attestation that you're vaccinated. Would you recommend that we go to proof of vaccination for the public if we're in a situation where people are not respecting the honor system?
I mean, generally that is safer to go to actual proof of vaccination. Now, at least you're doing the step of an attestation. A lot of places aren't even doing that. They just have a sign that says, you know, wear a mask if you're unvaccinated, but there's no one checking and making you attest that you're vaccinated. So certainly what you're doing is already better than most places. And I think, you know, it is pretty effective, but if you wanted to be even safer, you'd have people actually show their card or show their vaccine status on their phone. You can pull that up on the state website.
And then the follow up, as if I go into a grocery store or something and they've got just a sign that says, you know, mask up if you're not vaccinated. You're suggesting I mask up, I'm vaccinated, and I'm masking up. And is the reason for protection of myself, is it kind of, you know, sociological reasons to get other people to mask up and respect the needs, or what's the rationale behind it? And we're not talking about compulsion at this point. So,
or could you be carrying it and not know it, even though you're vaccinated?
Or is that? I mean, is that? So but you don't really spread it much if you have.
Well,
or do you?
So all great questions. So it's really all three. One of the biggest things is that we have found, you know, people, we are a community species. We do what other people do. And so part of what gets us to mask up is seeing other people wear masks. I think one of one of the ways that this protocol broke down was that we just said, you know, don't wear a mask if you are, if you're vaccinated. And so if you're unvaccinated, you walk into a store and everyone is not in a mask, you feel strange putting a mask on. You feel like you're kind of outing yourself as being unvaccinated. And so unfortunately, I think we put a social pressure on people to take their masks off. What we would like to do is encourage all of us to put our masks on. And I think part of what you are doing there is encouraging other people to mask just like you. But there are also other benefits there. You know, these vaccines are incredibly effective, but they're not 100%. We do get breakthrough infections. And so part of what you're doing there is protecting yourself by wearing a mask and also protecting others in case you happen to be one of those rare breakthrough infections. I think of it as, you know, a really simple tool that we can all use. You know, we've done it before in Jefferson County. We've done an incredible job protecting our people. We can do it again. And it won't be forever, but I do think we need to wear masks for at least the next couple months as we get through this surge.
Can we stay on the new masking recommendation before we switch into other? Because I have a couple more. So I'm curious, in this somewhat controlled environment that we have in the courthouse, and this is really timely because we're meeting actually with all of our department directors at lunch today, so I'm trying to get as much information as possible so that we can be prepared for how we advance this countywide. And I think it's a good test case for others too. It's not just specific to us. But if we have a relatively controlled environment, such as in the courthouse, and maybe we consider tweaking that to be more controlled, is that enough to maintain? So, you know, right now we have unvaccinated folks or others who choose to continue to wear masks, and those who are vaccinated and are comfortable go unmasked. Is that controlled enough to prevent spread, or are you saying that the fact that either because of higher contagion or risk of breakthrough, that we would be better to all be masking?
I would say if you are truly assessing vaccine status, I think you can, that's adequately safe. I think the challenge is many places just aren't. You know, they're just saying wear a mask if you're supposed to. But if you're really assessing your staff's vaccine status, you know, if your HR has gone through, really made sure, you know, you are vaccinated, okay, you don't have to wear a mask, and really gone through all those steps and is making sure that those who are unvaccinated are masking, then that is safe. But that's uncommon, unfortunately.
And we do have the public coming and going, so it is, even if we do that assessment with our staff, it is not comprehensive in many of our departments.
You know, we had a similar conversation with Port Angeles, with the Port Angeles city government, of how they wanted to handle this. And the way they're doing it is they really do assess vaccine status. And so those who are unvaccinated and work for the city do have to wear masks. But then anytime they interact with the public, they also put a mask back on, because you don't know the status of the public, right? And that's what I would recommend. If you're having public meetings where the public are coming in, that I would recommend masking in those kind of settings.
Any other questions for Dr. Berry on this topic, Mark?
No.
You get to actually implement this.
Well, I'm not sure we've settled on a technique yet.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, just to go on your last comment, Dr. Berry, I mean, we're in a public meeting right now. Should we go get our masks?
Got it right here.
In person? Yeah, right. I would. And it's a change, you know, it's okay. It's a new thing. But yeah, going forward, if the public are there in person, I would recommend we mask up, unless you're properly having folks, if you're assessing their vaccine status as they come in and having an only vaccinated meeting. But I think with open public meetings, that has been a complex thing to try to do. So masking in those settings makes sense, and requiring masking of the folks in the building as well. And I'm curious, I know Dr. Locke also participated in the drafting of this policy. Do you have any thoughts that you want to share on the topic?
Well, yes, I seldom resist the opportunity to express my opinion about things. And the main thing I would add is, and I think what people really need to understand is that the Delta variant is a real game changer in our management of the pandemic. And the more we find out about this virus, the more worrisome it becomes. And some of the latest things we found out is that the the viral, when people get infected with it, their viral loads are much higher than the previous strains. You know, one study put it at 1,000 times higher. And that makes people more contagious, and especially in indoor settings. And then in addition to that, people are becoming infectious sooner. Now with Delta virus, you become infectious 4 days after exposure instead of 6 days. And we think some of this may be driving this increased breakthrough case rate that we're seeing, in that people are just getting exposed more often. Yeah, something I think people don't realize, even those of us that are fully vaccinated, is exposure risk is cumulative. It's a big difference whether you're being exposed once a day or once a week, or you're being exposed 10 or 20 or 100 times a day. You know, if your system has to be constantly defending itself against exposure, you're more likely to eventually get infected. So that's driving the indoor masking as well. And I agree 100% with Dr. Barry, is we have to change the societal norm on this. We have to go back to the norm of being, we mask up in indoor spaces, unless people want to go to the necessary trouble of verifying vaccination status. We still think it's safe for people who are fully vaccinated and asymptomatic to be indoors unmasked together. But it's just not the status quo is not working. The final thing I'd say, just as a heads up, because of this, you're going to be hearing a lot more about vaccine mandates and more about verification of vaccination status and things like bars and places where it's high risk of transmission. So things are going to be changing. You know, we hope that there would be this lull that would last the entire summer, but it's not going to happen. We think that now case rates are going to be going up now for the rest of the summer. And if we don't do something now, they'll go up even more rapidly. We could get into a medical surge situation again.
And one of the key aspects there is, you know, speaking to business leaders, for example, you know, many folks cannot tolerate capacity limitations again. They can't tolerate getting closed again. They don't have that option. They don't have the backup. And so we want to make that as unlikely as possible. And so masking is something we can do. To try to blunt infection so that we don't go that way. You know, really, it's the least economically devastating option that we can do to try to get numbers under control and to try to get infection under control. We have, I think many of us thought we were at the point where we wouldn't see a hospital surge anymore, and that's not true. We are seeing hospital surges across the country. We had a hospital surge in Clallam County just 2 weeks ago, where we were on divert and triaging patients and not being able to do the kind of surgeries that we normally would. It can happen very, very quickly, especially it's really driven primarily by the variants we're seeing at this point. And the only other thing to clarify is... The one last thing to clarify is that there's a lot of questions about whether or not this is a mandate. It is not. It is a recommendation at this point. So we're just really encouraging folks to mask up again. I know it's a change, but we've done it before. I think we can do well. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. A couple of things. One is we take your recommendation seriously. It might take us a couple days to figure out how to implement it again. Just, you know, big ship turns slowly, so we will spend time this afternoon talking about how we effectively implement this, given some of the finer points. I also just want to say I see a couple of hands up from members of the public joining us, and just we are not able to take comments in this setting. We take public comment at 9 a.m., but we just don't have time to open this up to a public forum, so I apologize about that. Great. Questions.
So I have a question on changing the topic a little bit, but someone in my family got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine months ago and has been reading a lot about the Delta virus. So this Delta virus variant, and this follows on to what Dr. Locke was saying, but I'm sure both of you have perspective on this. Is there a sense that a booster is needed, in your opinion, for that vaccine or any of the other vaccines? That we're hearing more in the media and social media about boosters, and I'm just wanting to ground truth that.
So great question. And I've certainly started to receive questions from the public on this as well. The data is really mixed on Johnson & Johnson and the Delta variant. Some studies show that it is still excellently effective, and then other ones show a decrease in effectiveness against the Delta variant in particular. So it still remains to be seen whether or not a booster will be needed for Johnson & Johnson. What I would say is if you got Johnson & Johnson, you are still very well protected, but it's know that we are looking at it. It's being studied right now. And certainly if we think a booster is necessary, we will put that message out. But we're not quite there yet where that is a current recommendation. But certainly there's no harm in wearing a mask. And we don't know for sure that you'll get exposed to the Delta variant if you do. Mostly out here, we have Alpha variant. We still have a little bit of wild type variant floating around. We have a little bit of Gamma variant. But I would say it's all the more reason to go ahead and start masking when you're around unvaccinated people. But we will definitely, we're following that very closely, and we will definitely let you know if a booster starts being recommended. Luckily, we have adequate vaccine to do that.
Yeah, follow up to that. Is a booster for Johnson & Johnson one shot of Moderna or Pfizer? That's what we got to in our conversation.
It is not. There is not a protocol yet at this point of what we would be doing in those settings. But that will be very closely monitored. And we will definitely let you know if that does become needed. I think the one key thing to know is that boosters are being studied. That doesn't necessarily mean that boosters are needed. We like to know in advance of when they are needed. So a lot of that is being studied so we're ready.
And then one follow-up comment still on those Delta variants. Theme, I think, is that in a public comment earlier, there was a mention of the vaccine only being effective for 10 weeks. Is there any kind of studies being done or proof that vaccines lose their effectiveness after a certain period of time?
No. No, these vaccines, actually, it's the opposite. So the data we have so far is that significant persistence of vaccine effectiveness. The only challenge that we're always watching for is as the virus mutates, if it could mutate to the point that it gets past a vaccine. And that really, unfortunately, is spread by continued transmission. That's why it's not okay to just let this virus run through and see what happens, is because we'll get new and likely worse variants if we do. But no, right now, our current data is that these vaccines actually show a much longer immunity than natural infection, actually.
And we're hearing about a few breakthrough cases. Are breakthrough cases attributed to the different variants?
Breakthrough cases can happen. They are expected. We talk about a 95% effective vaccine, which means, if we just exposed everyone fully, then 5% of folks would get breakthrough, but we actually don't all get 100% exposed. So it is expected. We're going to have some cases, usually among folks who are immunosuppressed, or very elderly, but not always. We do always send those for sequencing when it happens. Often so far, they have been variant infections in Clallam County. We've had more of these over time just because we get more infections. And so far, they've been mostly Alpha variant and some Gamma variant as well. We haven't had any Delta variant come back yet.
Thank you.
But do we know kind of nationally, there's so much anecdotal chatter right now about more breakthroughs, and I think people associating it with the Delta variant just because that's in the news, but do we have any definitive data yet as to whether there seems to be greater breakthrough given with the Delta variant?
I would say we don't have definitive data yet, but we have early suggestion that there is more breakthrough with the Delta variant. But we're, it's a new variant, and so we're building that data right now. The challenge is it's hard to figure out the denominator in those infections. So is it that we're getting more breakthrough, or is it that just more people are getting infected? So you're going to get some more breakthrough just by the sheer number of people getting exposed.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can I follow up on that real quick? I mean, the first question is, last week and before you were talking about there being two pandemics. It seems like we're just back to one pandemic now.
I would say actually we still have two pandemics. You know, I think we are all in this together, though. I think we do have one pandemic that we are all a part of and we can all make steps to make a difference in. But your outcomes are dramatically different if you're vaccinated or not. Very unlikely, incredibly unlikely that you're going to get hospitalized or die if you're vaccinated. And so I would say it is still very different, but we are encouraging everyone to take some steps that we can that are non-invasive to try to get this under control. But so, for example, if you're vaccinated, I keep pausing and then I make it harder. If you are vaccinated, you can still do a lot more things. You can still gather safely indoors with your other vaccinated friends. You know, if you want to have a dinner party with your vaccinated friends, totally fine. If you want to travel and you're vaccinated, totally fine. So your life really should be much easier. I think the challenge that we're seeing is that those who are unvaccinated are doing the same thing. And that's really what's driving infections right now.
So you talked about 97% of hospitalizations are the unvaccinated. Do we have any idea what percentage of tract infections are unvaccinated?
Yes, and that was actually one of the KPTZ questions, was whether or not we can start reporting that. And I do believe we can. I'll need to dig into the data for Jefferson County because that hasn't been a metric you've been reporting. But if you look on clallam.net, we do report that for Clallam. And so it's 94% of infections since January have been unvaccinated people. So 6% are vaccinated. That's primarily driven by a single long-term care facility outbreak. And so if you take that out of the mix, 2% were vaccinated in Clallam County.
Thank you.
And I can just give you a rough number. For Jefferson, of the 483 cases, we only know of 10 breakthrough cases in Jefferson County right now. And so it you know, it's a relatively small percentage.
But yeah, I think we can start posting those on the website. Usually we do post it kind of from when vaccines were available, just because you get a small enough number of cases that that percentage can change a lot from week to week. If you have a long-term care outbreak, for example, but if we do it since January, we can post that easily.
Would you say that those 10 cases are pretty highly correlated with age?
Yes. So, and occupation, I think, would be the one other one. We've had some folks who got exposed, you know, really high dose exposures in their work. And so then they had mild breakthrough infection, you know, a little sore throat, things like that, because they were fully vaccinated. But then for folks who were actually sick, that's correlated with age and immune status.
And is it common enough at this point that even those who are vaccinated, if they have a sore throat, if they have a couple mild symptoms, to go buy a home test kit and check that out?
Thank you for asking that question. So if you are fully vaccinated and you get sick, you should still get tested, certainly before you go into work or go be around other people. Myself, you know, I have a daughter. She brings home a variety of colds to me. And so whenever that happens, I get a home test kit and I do a swab and make sure that it's not COVID. It's a simple thing. Luckily, there's much more testing available. The home test kits are fantastic. So you can quickly assess and make sure you're not bringing anything to work. And we do still recommend you stay home if you're sick.
All right. Any more questions? Or should we let Dr. Berry dive into KPTZ?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go for it.
So KPTZ questions. One was about age group designation. So right now on the website for Jefferson County, it's only 0 to 19. There's not any finer data there about where we're seeing breakdowns under or seeing cases below that age. I think we can break that out, and I'd be happy to. Usually the challenge in small communities with small numbers of cases is what's called the small numbers standard. We don't don't ever want to release enough information that people actually can figure out who individual cases are. And so we'll just need to make sure that it's de-identified enough. And what that'll probably look like in Jefferson County is that it needs to be the total number of cases in that age group since the beginning of tracking. We likely won't be able to release it week over week, just because that'll start to identify the age of individual cases, which we don't want to do in small communities. What I can tell you is we are tracking it in column. You can see that number on our website. It's broken out by 0 to 10 and then 10 to 19. In that age bracket, you see the majority are still teenagers, but there's a significant number under 10 driven primarily by daycare outbreaks. You know, the challenge in daycare is you have kids who can't mask, who get close together, right? They don't understand physical distancing. And so we do see transmission in those settings. Unfortunately, it's usually daycare provider to child. It's not actually child to child. And so that's part of why it's so important that daycare providers be vaccinated, because you are interacting with children who can't properly protect themselves from infection. But we can get that number. And I would say we should be able to get it on the website by next week. Other questions along that line, folks asked, what are we doing to protect the youngest in our community who cannot be vaccinated yet? And part of that really is this conversation around masking. I think it is important to remember that the vaccine isn't available to everybody yet. You know, all of our children under 12 cannot be vaccinated. And there is a subset of folks who can't respond enough to their vaccine. You know, their immune system doesn't work well enough to make a solid response. And there are rare folks who have significant allergies who can't get vaccinated. And so part of what you're masking for is protecting them. You know, I think we've talked a bit about the business community. The other key thing we're talking about is school. You know, so school is starting soon. And how do we make that return as safe as possible? And the best way we do that is we get our numbers down before school starts. I don't want to see us moving into the fall while we're riding a significant surge. So we need to do everything we can to get those numbers down before the fall. And the only other thing I would say is, as a parent of a small child myself, is, you know, we have to manage our child's interactions and remember that they are not vaccinated. So while we are fully vaccinated and can gather with other fully vaccinated individuals, their little friends are not. And so it's important that we be thoughtful about that. Luckily, the weather is lovely. We can gather our kids outside. They're not going to pick up COVID on the playground, so they can do that as much as they want. It's really important that we be thoughtful in our other interactions. You know, make sure we're being thoughtful about not traveling with children if you can, or being thoughtful about minimizing their exposure if you do, and not having large numbers of unvaccinated people gather indoors with our kids. And then otherwise, the only other questions I had, one was about the vaccination rates and rates of infection among different folks. And then there was just one really nice one that was a thank you for Dr. Locke that I just thought we maybe should read because he's done a lot for this community. So it says, congratulations on your retirement. We will miss you greatly. We appreciate that you have stayed on to see us through the pandemic. I don't think we would have made it without you. Your advice was the truth and perfectly explained. We have listened every week since March 2020. You gave us confidence and ways to protect ourselves. We are forever grateful. And I think that speaks for many of us at this point. Any other questions from the commissioner group?
Do you need some art? A bit of a blank void behind you there.
Yes, this is not where I normally have my meetings. So I'll be back home soon.
Looks like Dr. Locke might be able to spare some.
Yeah,
I think he can help me decorate these walls.
I would just love to reiterate what you're saying about return to school, and really unfortunate. I think we heard sometime in the last year and a half the all the fear around schools being vectors for disease and putting a lot of pressure on kids. And I have two teenagers, and I think that it ended up being kind of transferred to them, and it was such an important reframing to say, no, it's the community's job to keep our community safe enough so that kids can be back in school, not like, oh, that's going to provide another great source of infections. Like, no, it's our responsibility as the adults in the room to be as safe as possible so that kids can be in school doing their really important academic, social, emotional learning. So,
and hearing the vectors of childcare coming from childcare providers to the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's I think it's always our responsibility as adults to take care of children. And I think, unfortunately, last year, our children bore a disproportionate amount of responsibility for us so that we could do other fun things. You know, it shouldn't be that we're prioritizing bars over schools, right? And I think we need to do that differently this year. We need to prioritize keeping kids in school as much as humanly possible, which means we need to do our work. We need to do everything we can in the community to reduce community transmission. And of course, we are already working very closely with the schools to make sure the schools can be as safe as possible. We are planning on full-time in-person learning, which means that in some cases, in some districts, that's closer together than 6 feet, just to get all those kids into the classroom. But we are planning on masking in the fall, and certainly a multitude of other layered interventions, symptom screening, testing. We're doing a lot of planning with schools to make sure there's testing available in the school year this next year, so that we can make this as safe a space as possible for our kids, but allow them to get in there and learn.
Great. Thank you. Okay. If there's nothing else for Dr. Berry, shall we hand it over to Willie?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Welcome. Willie?
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm back from a week off last week, so apologies for missing, but it was nice to take some time off and get outside and go backpacking where phone and email wasn't even an option if I wanted to. So that was much needed. I appreciate it.
Well done.
Only thing for me is actually just about 20 minutes ago, we started one of our pop-up vaccine clinics at the Elks Lodge in PT for the veterans stand down there. So we're just offering single dose Johnson & Johnson at that event. We'll be out there until 2 p.m. Just a couple members of our mobile vaccine team. So you can come and visit us down there if you have questions, want to get your single dose shot, et cetera, et cetera. That is our only planned pop-up event for the foreseeable future. We have a couple potential as far out as September that we're currently weighing. But again, we've discontinued a lot of those pop-up events due to low turnout. As Dr. Berry said, there are a lot of options available at the pharmacies, at Jefferson Healthcare's Express Clinic. So do seek those out if you're so inclined. Other than that, we will be connecting with Dr. Berry this week, as I was out last week. So we'll chat with our new health officer and talk about our vaccination strategy moving forward, especially again with school coming up in the fall. Potential for booster doses continues to loom large, and we're continuing to monitor that. So that's the only thing on our vaccine operations front. The other thing I wanted to mention just real quick, and I wasn't sure if this was mentioned last week, but we did get a request from a citizen asking that we note that the eviction moratorium has indeed ended, but Governor Inslee has put in place what he calls his bridge proclamation through September 30th to assist renters who have had a difficult time with income loss and rental assistance during COVID-19. So there are resources available out there for renters who are struggling as this September 30th date approaches. And this is the kind of thing that, we've talked about having multiple pandemics going on. This eviction disaster looming is kind of a disaster within a disaster. So we really want to make sure that folks who are struggling paying rent, who are struggling with their housing, access the resources that they need. So there is a website I do want to pitch, housingsolutionsnetwork.org, housingsolutionsnetwork.org. And they can connect you with eviction prevention resources and contact information for a couple of different programs, things like rental assistance from OLECAP, legal aid from the Northwest Justice Project, as well as Plowman and Jefferson pro bono lawyers. So reach out, access those resources if you need help. Housing has been a big ongoing issue within this county even before the pandemic. And the pandemic has only made things worse. So we want people to get the resources they need. Hit up that website. Or as always, I'll make another pitch. Our call center is still taking calls. It's not staffed most of the time, but we will get back to you within 24 hours. and that's at 344-9791. So if you have vaccine questions, testing questions, or you just need access to resources, we'll help walk you through that process. So don't hesitate to give us a call there. Other than that, I will also just throw a shout out to Dr. Locke. It's been an honor playing the kind of the Garfunkel to your Simon during these briefings for the past year and a half. As I said, Dr. Barry, I'll be in touch this week now that I'm back, and we'll chat and get our team hooked up and start talking about moving forward from there. So that's everything from me, barring any questions.
Great. Thank you, Willie. And we do have a hearing at 10:30, so we don't have a lot of time, but can you give us any indication? Do we have wildfire smoke headed this direction? Should we be thinking about planning for that?
Not imminently, but fires are popping up all over the state, as well as all over the Pacific Northwest. And as we saw last summer, that wildfire smoke can travel pretty significant distances from British Columbia, from California, et cetera. So the air quality is not looking to degrade over the course of the next week or so, but there are some fires that are springing up. They are growing. Specifically in Southern Oregon is where they're seeing some of the hardest hit areas and the most rapidly growing fires. So it is worth it for a lot of folks to consider how they might protect themselves from wildfire smoke. Most of it involves just shutting windows, staying indoors. Air filters are a huge help, as well as the ability to cancel any sort of outside activities, especially if you do have any sort of respiratory issues. Younger children as well as older adults are more affected than others. So we do have some information and resources on our website. There is some good information and resources on FEMA site, CDC, places like that. So again, it's not imminent, but seeing some degraded air quality over the course of this summer is highly probable given how the level of drought in the state of Oregon and other places and the fires that are springing up. So it looks to be a bad fire season, therefore, might see some of that smoke come in our area.
Thank you.
Willie, on that front, we have the cooling centers popping up during that last hot flash we had. Have drawn a few questions about, can we have a rapid spool up of cooling centers or where people can't take care of the air quality in their living situation and where they might need to be in somewhere that is air conditioned and do we have that in our back pocket?
Yeah, we actually do. Last summer, because the degraded air quality was kind of a first for us, we did scramble to put a plan together that never actually got activated. Thankfully, though, we do have a air quality shelter plan in our back pocket now. So Commissioner Eisenhower, I know you reached out. I'll connect with you this week as well. We do have a couple of facilities identified, a couple of groups identified. And honestly, one silver lining to come out of COVID is that we do have a lot of great volunteers who've stepped up to help us out in emergency management, who will be able to help us staff those potential air quality centers. We also were able to get some funding from the CARES Act specifically for some air quality shelter supplies. So we do have filters and cots and other sheltering supplies on hand. We don't necessarily like to pre-identify where those shelters might be, since we don't want folks making an assumption on what's going to be available, et cetera. But if that air quality starts to degrade, Dr. Locke provided us last year with some trigger points for when we should look to open those shelters. So again, we do have that in our back pocket, and Commissioner Eisenhower, you and I can talk, and then we can talk about some of our messaging, and we'll make available to the general public what we can.
Great. Thanks, Willie.
Thank you. Okay, any last comments before we get ready for a hearing?
Quick question and comment. Thanks, Willie, for bringing up some of the resources available through Housing Solutions Network. And just want to point out that there's also utility assistance available through OLECAP, and landlords as well as tenants can get the funds for if someone's in arrears. So you know, we want to make sure that we keep people in their houses, and it can take many different people reaching out. But thanks a lot.
Great. Anything else from the good doctors? Dr. Locke, is this really the last time you're going to join us in this formal setting?
Well, it's been my experience that nothing is ever really over. As a deputy, I'm very much willing to do fill-in work. We hope that Dr. Barry will take regular vacations and take good care of her mental health, and that's what an alternate's for. And I'll still be active on the peninsula and you know, the issues that I really care about, climate change, universal access to health care, voting rights. It's a long, long list. And so people should not expect me to disappear, but I am so pleased that someone of the caliber of Dr. Barry is available to take over this very difficult job. And the challenges that lay ahead in this next year, but I'm confident that we're going to navigate them well. And as I want to keep reminding people, pandemics always come to an end, and we want to do it with the least amount of deaths and preventable morbidity. But this will one day this will come to an end. This is not a permanent thing.
Phew. Yeah. Well, thank you. We need to shift gears into our hearing at 10:30. So thank you all. Thank you, especially Dr. Locke, of course. We will see you again. Stepping back, I think you said, not retiring. So appreciate that. Willie, welcome back to reality. Envious, the week in the backcountry. We will be filling your inbox shortly.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
And don't forget, a recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you, Dr. Locke. Thank you, Dr. Barry. Thank you, Commissioners. Thank you, Willie Bentz. And thank you for listening.